The Hoop Collective is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Before we get started today, I just wanted to remind you that you can catch every game of the NBA Finals on ABC and ESPN Radio, where you can hear Doris Burke doing color, by the way. Plus, relive one of the greatest icons and most successful teams in sports history, Michael Jordan, the 1997-98 Chicago Bulls. Stream the Emmy and NAACP Image Award-winning series, The Last Dance, on ESPN Plus.
Welcome to an After the Buzzer Finals podcast, Low Post Hoop Collective joint venture, and we finally got a game. We almost maybe got a classic, I'm not sure. Devin Booker with an absolutely legendary performance, 17 of 28, 42 points. A sixth foul that maybe wasn't called, and then a seventh foul that maybe wasn't called.
It wasn't maybe.
Almost enough to overcome. Are you guys ready for this? Milwaukee, 17 offensive rebounds, Phoenix 5. Milwaukee, 5 turnovers, Phoenix 17. 5 of them committed by the point god, who was completely out of sorts, and Booker had absolutely no help, but almost somehow overcame an incredible possession and shot attempt disadvantage. Lots to talk about in this game. We have a 2-2 finals. We have a best of three finals. As usual, Brian Windhorst is with me, and I am so excited to have New York City's own, Denver's own, the head coach of the Denver Nuggets, Michael Malone. How are you?
Guys, I really appreciate you having me on. Can't wait to see you guys later on this summer. And as you said, Zach, that was a great finals game. And if you're an NBA fan, you have to love it, because now it's 2-2, best of three moving forward. And that game was won and lost so many times in the fourth quarter.
Wendy, where do you want to start? Was there a play? Was there a story? Was there a moment? I mean, Phoenix had them up 9. Campaign made a couple of big plays at the end of the third quarter. They survived Devin Booker going out with foul trouble. Chris Paul made a couple of baskets in a big stretch. I don't know if there was a moment you want to start with or something you want to start with, but take it away.
I mean, I don't have chapter and verse of Chris Middleton's career at my fingertips right here. I find it hard to believe he's played a finer game. Not only the fact that he had the 40 points, but his shot making and playmaking down the stretch of this game and making baskets when they needed him throughout the game. I mean, you know, Giannis had a strong game. It was not the same level as his last two games. He looked a little fatigued to me, and that's something to watch going forward, but he still had 26, 14 and 8. I mean, it was a brilliant game, but they won this game because of Chris Middleton elevating. And, you know, we'll talk about the foul, non-foul. We'll talk about, you know, Giannis with the block on Ayton, which one of the great defensive plays he's ever made. You know, the Bucks being really almost losing this game and then just making a bunch of plays to win it. But Chris Middleton, Michael, Chris Middleton, I know you've coached against him, but, you know, some people have questioned whether he is a true number two, and sometimes they go away from him. Tonight they put the ball in his hands and he delivered at the highest level. And that's what I'll take away from this game. This was Chris Middleton's game.
Yeah, I agree, Brian. I mean, Chris Middleton, 40 points, as you mentioned, 6 rebounds, 4 assists. But I felt late in that game, or down 9 in the fourth quarter, in the Chris Middleton, Giannis pick and roll, that two-man game proved very, very effective. Obviously, that's something that Monty and his staff will watch the film and try to figure out moving forward how they can guard that. But it's really incredible. You know, Milwaukee wins this game, which is a must win. You know, you don't want to go back to Phoenix down 3-1. They shoot 40 from the field and 24 from three. Well, how do they win? Zach touched on the rebounding numbers, 17 offensive rebounds for 19 points, and the fast break points, 15-0 in favor of Milwaukee. And I think the biggest thing, this is probably the son of a coach coming out, 17 turnovers to 24 points for Milwaukee, a very sloppy game. And that started from the first quarter and, you know, kind of continued all the way throughout. Chris Paul, a really big turnover late. And then Milwaukee, only 5 turnovers for 5 points. So even though they didn't shoot the ball great, Jrue Holiday really struggled from the field tonight, but I felt the impact of the game with his defense. Came up with
a good offensive rebound. I thought he made a lot of really good plays.
A lot there of really were winning plays. I thought Pat Connaughton was terrific for those guys tonight. I mean, you know what you're going to get from your stars usually. Which role player will step up? And I thought, yes, Chris Middleton gets the game ball, but he has some guys step up and make some timely plays, which allowed them to overcome a 9-point deficit in the fourth quarter and pull away late. So, as I mentioned earlier, man, I'm excited they won because now we have a chance for a 7-game series and there's nothing better in the NBA Finals.
Pat Connaughton plus 21 for the game off the bench. Three huge threes, three offensive rebounds, including one on a Chris Middleton miss when it was 95-90 Phoenix. That ended in somebody scoring a basket for the Bucks. I can't remember. And I think that plus 21 is interesting. And I think the Bobby Portis plus 7 is interesting because, again, you can see Bud trying to find lineups that have enough defense and enough shooting. And he went back to their Giannis Tucker at center lineup to close the game. But I thought he found some. I talked about the Giannis Portis combination at the after game three being something that I think we would see. And I thought he found something with the lineup of Holiday, Middleton, Connaughton, Giannis, Portis. I like that lineup a lot. That lineup was good for them. But yeah, we need to talk about the block. We're like in the golden age of blocks. From LeBron in 2016, we had Bam on Tatum last year. That was an absolutely incredible play from a guy who I feel like we need to say this every time. Hyperextended his knee like basically yesterday, and all of us worried that he was going to be out for the season. Just a ho-hum 26, 14, 8, 3 steals, 2 blocks for Giannis. And then the other big play at the end, if you want to boil it down to 2 plays, I think, Coach, was the block and then Chris Paul with his 5th turnover of the game with Milwaukee down or Phoenix down 2 trying to split kind of a pick-and-roll coverage. And I don't know what you thought, Coach, but that whole game, it just seemed like he didn't have control of the ball. Like, is the wrist bothering? He kept losing the handle. He short-armed that little floater, but it just – he didn't have his handle. I don't know. I can't think of an explanation other than maybe the wrist is bothering him. What are you seeing from Chris other than the fact that whether it's Devin Booker or Chris Paul, Jrue Holiday is making your life incredibly unpleasant, and the refs tonight – let him beat the hell out of people. And I don't say that in a bad way. It was like good physical watching him chase Devin Booker around picks. I was like sweating through my screen. But what did you see from Chris, Coach?
Yeah, you know, long been a fan of Chris. And obviously these very Phoenix Suns we're talking about swept us in the second round. And Chris, it was a healthy dose of Chris Paul and Devin Booker. This was a very un-Chris Paul-like game. Just like in game 3 when Devin Booker had 10 points, he responded in a big way and almost, if he doesn't get in foul trouble, puts his team on his back and has a chance to go 3-1. I expect Chris Paul going home to really bounce back. But I agree, Zach. I thought from the get-go, Chris was loose with the ball, which you rarely see. I thought he was almost – he's got to look to score a little bit more. I think Milwaukee's playing him for the pass. And I think the shot is there. He's got to be a little bit more aggressive to score, which I think will open up things for his teammates. And I'm glad you mentioned it. And I also think you have to give Jrue Holiday credit. You know, if you go 4 of 20 in a game, most people are not, they're not going to be able to find other ways to impact the game. But Jrue Holiday's defense, his rebounding, his ability to get to the free throw line, and he has 7 assists, only 1 turnover in a must-win game. So I haven't seen Chris play like that very often. But once again, give the Milwaukee defense and most notably Jrue Holiday some credit. And I fully expect Chris to respond as they go home. He's going to take this loss very, very hard. One of the greatest competitors, one of the best leaders I've ever been around. And I know this one's going to be hard sleeping tonight if you're Chris Paul. And that's what makes him a great player.
Yeah, definitely a missed opportunity. They've got to feel this missed opportunity. That's the one thing that they're going to, you know, it's 9 points with how much time was left, Zach, when it was 9 points. That's going to potentially haunt them. But I really want to key on what Michael is talking about with Holiday. He's only shooting 33% in this series, but I do feel like he's making so many plays, and you know, he's fighting over screens, and when he's on Booker, when he's on Paul, and you know, this game, Booker. So I just want to say, the closeout game in the first round in LA against the Lakers, I realize they were banged up, but still, his first ever closeout opportunity. And he goes for 47 and 11 rebounds in the Staples Center. Then I'm sorry to bring this one up, coach, but in Denver in a closeout game, he goes for 34 in that one. On the road closeout game, okay? And then Clippers, you know, he played just okay in that closeout game, but still had, you know, a really big game one in that series of 40 points. And then here he is in a vital, vital game, and he puts up 42 on the road. This guy is putting together just a remarkable postseason. And I really thought when he comes back in the game there with about maybe 5 minutes left, and they still had the lead. They didn't lose the lead when he was out. I really thought they were going to have it. And then he gets the call of his lifetime. I doubt he'll ever get a call that favorable again. I almost say,
Whitney, he lobbied for a jump ball going into the timeout. Well, that was the best part of the whole thing.
Well, first off, Mike Breen never reacts. He's so straight down the middle. Mike Breen never reacts the way that he did, where he was just like, He fouled them and they didn't call it. Another thing is James Capers. I don't know who I can say is the best official, but if I had to pick an officiating crew to ref a game, James Capers would be on my three-man crew. I think he's one of the finest officials, one of the steadiest officials. We won't have Coach Malone comment on the officiating, but
yeah, one of the rules of this podcast is don't get anyone fined. Don't get anyone right. fined.
I like that rule. So is my wife.
All I can say is it's got to be a brain fart. It's got to be a brain fart. I feel bad because he's one of the finest officials in the league, and he's also he doesn't get emotional. Some officials you can feel him get emotional. In my view, seeing him work, he doesn't get emotional, and so I would like to pass a rule that Booker's not allowed to argue a foul the rest of the series, but he was arguing fouls instantaneously right after that. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, girl-sinking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Well, imagine if they had won and Booker had made like a dagger in the last minute of the game. The whole finals, that's the whole story. That's only, and then Phoenix goes on to win in four, five or six games. That's the only thing people end up remembering from the finals. The league is lucky that it went the other way.
Oh, I mean, I've long said that, every year on the anniversary, I guess David Blatt didn't have much of an NBA coaching career anyway, but David Blatt almost committed a Chris Webber. And I still believe to this day that in a game, it might've cost him a playoff series, that Scott Foster let him get away with it. He saw him call a timeout he didn't have, and Scott Foster let him get away with it. And David Blatt was forever indebted to Scott Foster. It's not permitted for referees and players to interact like this, but James Capers, is probably forever indebted to Chris Middleton for coming through and winning that game and taking that off of the table, because that could have defined this series.
And Brian, for Giannis, who followed that play up, no call, and lays it in.
Yes.
You know what I mean? On that, the missed foul call or the non-call that you're alluding to, you know, he's got his hand wrapped around his waist. He shoots it, or it gets knocked out of his hands. But Giannis has the wherewithal to run the floor and catch it and lay it in. So, you know, big play there.
So you have a history, Michael, of at certain times justifiably losing your mind at the officials and getting thrown out. I don't know if that would have been a good time for a coach to get thrown out, but I would not have blamed any coach for absolutely, like in baseball, this is one of the things where the coach runs out and kicks the dirt on the umpire. Like,
no, you throw the base, you pick up first base and you throw it into the outfield.
Yeah. You remember the guy who used the rosin bat like a grenade? He had the multi, like Michael, if that was your team, all bets would have been off. I don't know.
Don't get him fined. Don't get him fined, okay. Wendy.
I'm sorry.
No, you know, though, to be honest, I think a lot of times when I do that, it's very calculated. You know, it's me trying to protect Nicola. Sometimes it's not. There have been times where I've just kind of, you know, you let your emotions get the best of you. But in that situation, I thought Bud handled it as well as possible, because there's so much time left and you have to find a way to win. And getting a technical, giving them easy points at the free throw line, you getting ejected as a head coach, that is not the time and place. So I give Bud a lot of credit. And by the way, you know, Zach, you alluded to this, but we never really got into it. The time and, you know, the block shot that Giannis had, I think it's around 1:15 to go in the game.
Yep.
And they run a pick and roll, and Ayton gets behind Giannis. They throw the lob pass. And probably 99.9% of the league is not going to be able to get back into play and break that up. And that's why Giannis is an incredible basketball player on both ends. Yes, he didn't have 40 points for his third straight game, but he was still incredible. But that block was, you know, a huge part of them being able to pull out this win tonight. And, you know, Milwaukee has long been one of the top defensive teams in the NBA. When you have a Jrue Holiday on the ball, when you have a P.J. Tucker out there, when you have a Giannis, you know, they have guys that are just great defensive players, and that block was game-changing. And he's had two now in this series that will be NBA Finals moments that people will look back upon for years to say that was a game-changing play. And, you know, that's why this game was so fun, because it went down to the wire.
Coach, I want to bring up something that you brought up earlier, which was the fast break points and the turnovers. And there's just a feedback loop there where the Bucks, even I'm looking at cleaning the glass right now, the Bucks half court offense in this game was not very good. Their transition offense was quite good and good enough to win. And that's been the case the whole series. And it's not just that they're forcing a low turnover team into turnovers. It's that those turnovers then get the Bucks out in transition, where they're just way, way, way better. They were the best team in transition the whole year. I also thought the Suns got a little bit sloppy with their floor balance a few times in this game. Like, guys just kind of hanging around for offensive rebounds they weren't going to get. And you could just see the Bucks, man, anytime they sensed it, anytime they had a mismatch that they liked, I thought both teams were actually trying to push the pace. You could see the Suns trying to get, you know, let's set that first screen at 19 on the clock. But I just wonder, from your perspective, when you face a transition animal like the Bucks, this machine that's just coming at you, what, and in this game in particular, like, what can you do to limit that? Other than, I mean, you can just say don't turn the ball over, but is there anything else you can do, or anything else you saw in this game that says let's keep these guys out of transition?
Well, as you asked that question, Zach, I have going through my mind a Hubie Brown story that I heard years ago. And he was coaching the New York Knicks, and his team was getting just destroyed in transition, but they also weren't getting any offensive rebounds. So he calls a timeout, and he has the board in front of him, and he says to his team, you're not here on the offensive glass, and you're not here, meaning you're not back in transition. So where the hell are you? If you're not on the glass and you're not back, where are you? The Phoenix Suns only had five offensive rebounds tonight. So it wasn't like they were sending guys to glass. When you play against an elite running team, you sacrifice offensive rebounds for floor balance, getting back. The live ball turnovers killed them tonight. It fueled Milwaukee's offense. But there were also instances where it was a missed shot and Phoenix was caught ball watching, poor floor balance. Nobody was getting back on the raise. And I remember one vividly where they got the rebound. Drew Holiday didn't even dribble. He threw over the top to Giannis and nobody was back. That's unforgivable in the NBA Finals. You have to find a way to force Milwaukee to play in the half court. And as you mentioned, as you alluded to some of the stats, Milwaukee's half court offense was not great. Late in the game, that two-man game between Chris Middleton and Giannis was terrific. But for 48 minutes, their half court offense was not great. So keep them off the glass, keep them off the foul line, and keep them out of transition. Very, very easy to talk about it, but now they have to go out there and do it. And they did not do it nearly enough tonight.
And just before you jump in, Wendy, the Middleton-Giannis stuff at the end was just incredible shot making. I mean, it was good defense and incredible shot making by Chris Middleton.
No, I've never seen Chris Middleton. The mid-range game. I mean, obviously we talk about free throw, layups and three pointers, and that's a. Teams are built to win that way, and there's no doubt that it's improved the quality of basketball in the NBA. But when you watch games at this level, you've got to be able to have somebody who can hit that mid-range shot. And it's one of the reasons why the Suns, why Booker and Chris Paul are so devastating, because they're both so great from the mid-range, and they can run that pick and roll and get around there. Middleton's ability to score from the mid-range throughout the whole playoffs, but in this game especially, like, those shots that he was able to get, I mean, the way he created space, I mean, that's, it's just vital. But I do say something that Coach said. The Bucks are a very good offensive team. They were, I think, number two or three in scoring in the regular season. But in the half court, their organization isn't strong. You know, certain people have said certain things about it that are harsher than that. But I'll just say it. In the half court, the Suns are much better organized than the Bucks are. And so I think that's got to be priority one, is make the Bucks have to get more organized, not just at the end of the game, but, you know, throughout the game. And so Middleton many times was able to overcome that bit of disarray. And that was with those mid-range shots. I just think, you know, if you think you're going to win an NBA title without somebody who can create shots in mid-range like that, I don't think that's reality in 2021.
Well, it's really funny you bring the mid-range up, because for so many years, you know, the analytical people, the mid-range was taboo. You know, it was, had to be a layup, a free throw, or a three. And, you know, we have two very good mid-range shooters in Denver. Nikola Jokic is phenomenal in the mid-range in the short role. And Jamal Murray, I mean, he's got to be able to make some of those shots to keep the defense honest. But there's one stat that we haven't talked about, and it speaks to the offensive rebounding and the turnovers. Milwaukee took 97 shots tonight. All right, they got 97 field goal attempts, and Phoenix only shot 78. I mean, so once again, that gets back to Phoenix's inability to value while Milwaukee valued at a high level. And it also speaks to the fact that it was a plus eight rebounding margin in favor of the Bucks, with 17 offensive rebounds to five. So, you know, obviously Phoenix, aside from Devin Booker, you know, obviously they're going to need a lot more help. I thought Cam Johnson in the fourth quarter stepped up, made some big shots for them. But, you know, that is a huge disparity in overall field goal attempts in a 48-minute game in the NBA Finals.
So Phoenix, this sometimes basketball is kind of a math problem, although it's not fun to talk about that way. But the one math problem that you're talking about, Coach, is just a possession game. Turnovers, offensive rebounds. Milwaukee is mauling them in that math problem. Another one, speaking of the mid-range, that is going against Phoenix is, so Phoenix was last in the league in shots at the rim this regular season. They've been getting to the rim at an even lower rate through three games in this series. In this game, according to Cleaning the Glass, 18% of their shots came in the restricted area. That would have ranked so far below their dead last rank in the regular season that it's not even worth considering. At the same time, only 29% of their shots were threes. 53% of the shots were mid-range shots. They have now reached it. The Bucks have shoved them to an equilibrium where they are actually taking too many mid-range shots. As great as those guys are, we didn't see the corner threes, and that's when you know Phoenix is really humming, when they get those Bridges corner threes, and Bridges was a non-factor for the most part. And so I you can take either one of these you want. What did you notice about how they're taking away the threes, or like how can Phoenix is just not getting to the rim enough? Like how can you just get something going to the basket other than, I guess, maybe get out in transition? Take that either way you want, but that shot math is now going dramatically against Phoenix.
Yeah, well, when you watch Milwaukee and how they guard, and again, they've been one of the top defensive teams for a few years now, so give Coach Bud and his staff and their team a lot of credit. But, you know, you have a choice when you guard pick and rolls. You can either have a big at the level, you can have a big and maybe a few steps below the screen, or some teams like Milwaukee will have their big all the way down the floor and basically say, we're going to guard this pick and roll two-on-two and stay home with the three. You know, so we're not going to get caught tagging in versus the roller and give up those skip pass threes. And what Milwaukee has the luxury of, as that big is down the floor, you have guys like Jrue Holiday, you have guys like Chris Middleton, PJ Tucker, that fight over the screen or get under the screen and rear view pursuit. So, you know, and that's what gave us trouble. We were up in our series to start, and then they killed us with threes. We went down the floor, we took the three away, but we did a poor job of pursuing over the top and contesting from behind. And those two really hurt us from the mid-range. So they went really small, obviously, like Phoenix has been doing. Torrey Craig as a backup five, ever since Saric got hurt. And they got Torrey on a screen and roll one time when Phoenix, when Milwaukee was small, and they weren't down the floor. But it's just more of an aggressive mindset. And I think that's a really interesting point. I wasn't aware of those numbers, Zach. But, yes, the mid-range is good, but it can't be 53% of your offense. You have to find a way to create some easier ones at the rim and also generate some open threes. And they didn't get enough of that. Only 27 three-point attempts tonight, which obviously is not enough.
Yeah, that's 7 of 23 from three is not enough. And I just – they've just got to get something at the rim. And maybe, again, it's if you don't get in transition, those transition chances are usually dunks and layups. If you don't get offensive rebounds, you don't get putbacks. So that's part of it. I also look at Ayton – 3 of 9, thought he settled a little bit on post-ups and no free throws. I just think they're going to need to get –
he never shoots free throws. He's got one of the lowest free throw rates in the league.
He's 2.5 a game. I just think they're going to need to have another game or two to win this series where he gets you 18 points and somehow just manufactures – like he can get 5 free throws against the – he's just got to manufacture – if I'm looking for – if I'm just answering the question – who is going to get me points at the basket if I can't run? It's got to be Ayton. He's whether it's offensive. He had 1 offensive rebound and 16 defensive rebounds. Like he's just got to produce something at the basket.
I thought that Devin Booker throwing that lob to him was an incredibly gutty play by Booker, because as Michael said, Giannis overplayed it. Right, Giannis came to defend the rim. It was a brilliant idea by Booker, and the pass was good. Giannis just recovered. But that shows, you know, they need that countermeasure, and they just didn't have it tonight.
You know, this one note on DeAndre Ayton, because I agree. Like, tonight, Devin Booker needs somebody to ride with him. He needs somebody to help out a little bit. And I wonder, you know, if Devin Booker doesn't get in foul trouble and has to sit in the fourth, you know, what happens in this game. But I think all 3 of DeAndre Ayton's field goals tonight were after Milwaukee switched. They've been switching the whole series. They switched the pick and roll. That puts Ayton inside against a small. They throw it over the top. He scores easy. I'm glad you brought up the 1 offensive rebound. Overall, 17 rebounds is a terrific number. But if Milwaukee is going to switch as much as they are, you either get the post up over the top, the lob pass over the top, or the Phoenix Suns perimeter players have to get the ball in the rim. And now DeAndre, sometimes your best offense is a missed shot. He's got to go and get on that glass, because They are taking a big body off of them at times, punish those smalls, and make Milwaukee have to counter the game plan and maybe play things straight up. And that may open up some other opportunities. But he's big, he's strong, he can score down there, especially if Milwaukee wants to continue to switch all those pick and rolls. And when he has that opportunity, he's got to really, you know, make an impact on that glass.
I just looked it up in the Clippers series to your what you just mentioned, Michael. He had here were his offensive rebound numbers in the Clippers series: 3, 3, 4, 9, 3, 5. So the offensive rebounding, that was one of the best series. You know, it was some of the best ball he's ever played. In this is his third game of the four where he had one or two, you know, but the one is the lowest he's had in about since you guys held him to one in game four. So you're right. That has been a weapon for them that has kind of gotten mitigated a little bit.
Winning is an everyday mindset. And on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Can we just shout out Devin Booker? 42 points, no threes. You don't see that a lot anymore.
Wow.
in the NBA in 2021.
Well, Coach might be right. Maybe too much mid-range.
And the other thing is, like, we can sit here and belabor all this stuff, and obviously every player's performance is tied into the bigger issues we're talking about. But, like, just point blank, if Chris Paul doesn't find his game, the Suns aren't going to win the series. I mean, it's that. And by the same token, like, the Bucks are treading on thin ice until Drew Holiday finds a little bit more of a coherent game on offense. But if Chris Paul can't be the point god, they just don't have enough to beat the Bucks, even with home court advantage.
And they're not here without Chris Paul. I mean, so I agree. I mean, it's 2-2, but, you know, Chris Paul has to play like the Hall of Famer that he is, going back in game five and moving forward as they try to close this series out. It's a best of three now, but 5-13 for Chris, 5 turnovers. Obviously, that is, and he was a minus 10 in his 37 minutes that he played tonight. So, as I mentioned earlier, man, that guy's competitive. He hates to lose. And this loss is really going to eat at him. And I just hope he comes out next game and doesn't overthink it. Just play. When he's out there playing and he's attacking and he's aggressive and he's confident, he's one of the best to ever do it.
Can we bother you with a couple of Nuggets questions?
Of course. Sure.
Are you visiting Serbia at all this summer?
You know what, with COVID and the protocols, like we've got some people that have left the country that are having a hard time getting back in the country. So that's one reason I probably will not. Number two, you know, after we lost game four to Phoenix, Nicola and I were hanging out after the game, Josh Kroenke, drinking a few beers, talking about the series, the season. And I joked around, I said, well, I look forward to coming over to visit. And he goes, Coach, you can come over anytime you want, but you're not going to find me. Nicola and I have been together 83 days in a bubble, quick turnaround, 72-game season, 10 playoff games. Right now, I think the last person he wants to see is Milanovic, which is what they call me in Serbia.
Have you ever gotten –
I think I know where to find him at that horse track.
Have you ever gotten into one of those little, what, I don't know what they call that buggy, but have you ever done that? I'm sure there's photos that I'm just forgetting.
No, I tell you what, man, I'll give you a quick story about that. Last time I went over, he goes, Coach, let's go to the stable. I'm like, great, let's go to the stable. That's like his happy place. He's with the horses. And he was getting ready to have practice for one of his horses, Dreamcatcher. He says, Coach, come on, you're going to ride the carriage. So I've never ridden a horse before. So I'm sitting in the carriage. They tell me what to do. And they said, just nice and easy. So I get in the carriage and I'm going, let's go. And we go around the first lap and Nicola and the trainer are yelling, Coach, slow down. You're going too fast. All right. We go on a second lap and I go faster. So we come around and they both stop. And they were like really pissed at me because Coach, you ruined practice. He was supposed to go nice and easy and you ran him too hard. You ruined practice. And then I got back to the house and his two brothers, Nemanja and Stahina, I told them that I was in the carriage and they said, he let you ride the carriage? I said, yes. And they were angry because they've never been given that opportunity. So okay. I felt honored and I also felt like I blew a golden opportunity.
What is it like walking through Sombor, Serbia with the three Jokic brothers? Are you just like, are people just like bowing to them? Are people throwing alcohol to them? Or like, what is it like? Are people throwing sausages to them to eat? Like I mean, if you've seen the brothers, they are characters, and Nicole is also a character, and they're all giant. I mean, it must be quite a scene.
Oh, it really is. You know, and obviously all of Serbia, but especially Sombor, where Nicole and the Jokic family resides, are extremely proud of what Nicole has been able to accomplish. Obviously, I think right now there's a little, you know, he didn't play for the national team, which I felt was the right decision considering all he's gone through in the last, you know, 12, 16 months. But yes, it's he is the pride of Sombor. They love him. And that's what I love about Nicole. He's just, he wants to go home. He's a homebody. He loves his community. He loves his town. They do a lot for that town. And one time I was there, we went to the mayor's big hall. We had a meeting with the mayor. So, you know, you feel like you're walking around like I'm Turtle in Entourage, you know, riding around and you'd be the big star of Sombor.
Is there, how's Jamal? I don't know what you can say publicly, but how is he doing? How's his rehab? Whatever you can say.
No, he's doing as well as can be expected. You know, he had the surgery. He was in LA for a while rehabbing. Once he was able to be cleared, I thought it was so important for our team. He joined us for the Portland series and obviously the Phoenix series, but just having his leadership, his voice, his energy around, I thought was tremendous for guys like Monte, Austin, Marcus Howard, Shaq. And then he spent a lot of time in Denver. Now he's in Phoenix actually rehabbing. And all the reports right now, Zach, are really positive. So, you know, that was a devastating game. You know, I mean, it was April 12th in San Francisco, end of the game. And we had 18 games to go at that time. I think a lot of people probably said, well, the Nuggets are done now. Jamal Murray, we all saw what he did in the bubble in the playoffs. He was superhuman. They're going to have a hard time doing anything special without him. And people don't talk about is that literally two games later, Monte Morris went down. A week later, Will Barton went down. A week later, PJ Dozier went down. So for us to go into the playoffs and find a way to beat Portland without our starting backcourt and playing two-way players and 10-day players, I couldn't have been more proud of our team. But Jamal is on the right track. He's doing well. And, you know, I'm really excited about that. And I feel kind of, we've seen this throughout the NBA, he's going to come back a better player. He's going to be stronger. He's going to be a little bit more mature. And he's going to pick up right where he left off.
Wynn, do you have any last questions? I don't want to hog all these Nuggets questions. Everyone knows I have a soft spot for the Nuggets.
I just think his whole team had to be so exhausted. I'm out here with Team USA and these guys have come back and they're just like, I just respect the effort that they're giving because they've just got to be so exhausted. You know, so you can tell the guys who weren't, you know, like Zach LaVine has the most juice out of anybody here. Cause he wasn't in the bubble and he didn't go a long playoff run. And you can feel it, you know, you look at these guys who've been in the playoffs, they just, don't have it. So I just can't. I know. I hope you're enjoying some downtime too, because I think we in the media are guilty of it too. We just, you know, next game, let's go. Next game, let's go. Okay, you had to go from Denver to Portland. Well, we don't care how you got there. We didn't care about what happened. We don't care about the guy had to spend 6 hours in the ice bath, training room, whatever. You know, the public doesn't get to know it, and even though those of us in the media, we know. But so I just can't imagine how I'm mentally and everything physically exhausted. And I know Jokic got, you know, the tabloids were after him in Serbia. And I know that, you know, then Serbia didn't qualify for the Olympics, and that was a thing. But, man, I mean, look at what that guy gave. So I just can't imagine how exhausted you were. And, you know, you looking at these teams who, you know, playing now have to be exhausted too.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, I've been in the league 20 years now, Brian. And this past season, by far, was the toughest season that I've ever gone through. And I think I probably speak for most people. You know, after we beat Portland the first round, Brad Stevens reached out to me, goes, what you guys are doing is incredible. You know, the last four teams in the bubble, us, Lakers, Miami, Boston, and we were the only team to make it out of the first round this year. And as injured as we were, obviously that speaks to the group that we have, that speaks to Nikola Jokic being an MVP. But I think more than the physical toll, it was the mental toll. And it wasn't just 72 games, condensed schedule. It was, we had a Sunday game at 1 o'clock. I was driving down to the arena to get tested at 11 o'clock at night on Saturday night. It was getting tested twice a day. It was just nonstop. And, you know, the question that's come up quite a bit, and I'm sure you guys have talked about it before, you know, there was talk that the NBA season was going to start, training camp was going to start around January 15th. And I think everybody in the NBA, especially those teams that were in the bubble and late in the bubble, felt that was a good starting date. And then all of a sudden it changed and news came down. We're starting on December 1st. And that was a really quick turnaround mentally and physically and emotionally. And that continued all season long. So as devastating as it was to lose to Phoenix and to get swept, I also sense for the guys that were here last year, it was also a little bit of a relief. Okay, man, this has been, wasn't just this season. It was 83 days in the bubble combined. And, you know, that's like one season together. And it was a lot was asked of everybody. And that's why I love our group, because not once did we ever mail it in or give up. We kept on fighting to the very end.
Well, both Brian and I have written a lot about your team over the years and about the toughness of your team. And I remember I wrote a piece before Game 7 against the Clippers last year that all of the attention was on the Clippers collapsing and what does this mean for Kawhi and PG and this experiment that they traded all these picks for. I just said people need to look at the Nuggets as a tough team. They don't necessarily – Jokic doesn't look like a guy you would describe as tough, like he's out there elbowing people. But starting from that year, whatever year it was, 17-18, where you had to win all bunch of games in a row to get to the last game of the season against Minnesota, and you did it. I just think a toughness and a certain resiliency has been really a unique part of the fabric of what you guys have built. And we talked about it off air before the podcast. I mean, I was toying pretty close with the Nuggets win the championship prediction before Jamal got hurt. And I just don't, I would love to play this season fully healthy, but I really think you guys, after trading Farron and Gordon, you guys had a team that could have done it. And you brought up that Clippers game when you went into LA and you just beat them up wire to wire, beat them up. And I remember watching that game sitting in this office that I'm in right now thinking, holy shit, they just went into LA fully healthy. I believe both Kawhi and PG played that game and just said, We're better. We're better than you guys, and we know it. Kind of win. So I just hope everyone gets healthy. We get to see that team sometime next season, hopefully.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, and I would agree, Zach. I think one thing we've shown in my 6 years, we've improved almost every season, which is incredible. To get out of the first round 3 years in a row, first time in franchise history. But the resiliency and the ability to handle and thrive in adverse conditions. Whether it's down 3-1 twice last year, whether it's going into Utah 2 years ago, only having 7 available players and finding a way to win, or making the playoffs this year and beating Portland in the first round. We never focus on what we don't have or who we're missing. We rather spend all of our time on who we do have and how we're going to find solutions and come away. And I talked about it earlier. April 1st, we go into LA, really big game. The winner of that game is going to have a season series, a head-to-head tiebreaker. We had just gotten Aaron Gordon the week prior. And after that game, I said, we really have a chance to win it all this year. And unfortunately, as we all know, covering this crazy business, you have to be lucky. Injuries are a part of it. And like a lot of other teams in the West, we suffered a lot of key injuries that, that we weren't able to see that through. But hopefully we can get healthy and make another run at this thing, because we have a lot of young, talented, special players, that I believe in.
Wendy, anything else you want to hit before we go?
Yeah, I want to leave you with this. First off, thanks to Coach Malone. We really appreciate your time. Enjoy your offseason. Get some rest. One of the things that drives me crazy is when people get shamed for getting dunked on and getting crossed over. Not as much with the crossover, but she gets shamed for getting dunked on because they're trying to play defense. The post-game press conference, which just ended, Giannis was asked about that block, and he said when he went over to defend it, he thought he was going to get dunked on. And I realize it was the end of a finals game, but it's one of the things I like about Giannis. He banks in a three-pointer. He doesn't sit there and get embarrassed about it. He goes, I'll take it. He airballs a free throw. Well, he's not happy about it, but he just moves on. If he had gotten dunked on there, he'd gotten dunked on, but I just want to say that's why you risk getting dunked on so you can make plays like that. Not everybody's Giannis, but I appreciate it. That's my parting shot. Thank you.
Well said, Wendy. Coach Michael Malone, thank you so much for your time. It's great to see you even virtually. I hope to see you non-virtually in Las Vegas, Nevada for Summer League. And Wendy, we will be back after Game 5, which I believe is on Saturday.
And Game 6, sir.
And games, well, yeah, I'm just going one day at a time, taking a day at a time. That's all we can do, one game at a time. Coach, thank you. Wendy, thank you. And we will see you in a few days, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.